Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And look, we got like a regular start back again. We're back.
Woo!
Yeah, everybody should be excited. Yo, Tony, before we get started with this week's episode, tell everybody where they can find us online.
They can find us online.
But where?
On the online places.
Like Instagram and Twitter?
Yeah, probably.
Like at The AeroPod?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The AeroPod. Trying to post more frequent. And again, if any scheduling changes, we normally update it there.
Yeah, so if y'all have any questions about our schedule, why we post an episode on Friday instead of Tuesday, all that stuff will be in the social media.
Yeah.
This week we're recording on Monday, which means that the possibility of us having an episode out on Tuesday is vastly increased, because if you record before Tuesday, you can definitely get an episode out by Tuesday.
Yes, fingers crossed.
So anyways, Tony, this week we're going to be talking about Legend of Korra, Season 4, Episode 3, The Korra Nation. And yes, it is definitely a Korra Nation, because that joke was definitely Corona incredibly Nation? Original and not Corona-filled and just unique and original and, like, very funny, and everybody laughed really hard.
I thought you were trying to say Korra Nation. Like, yeah. Like Korra, like Legend of Korra?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh. Okay.
But then But then you said Corona Nation.
And then you went with that, and then I was like, oh, okay. Is that what he was trying to say? Never mind.
No. I thought that you thought I was trying to say Corona Nation because you never acknowledged the fact that I said Korra Nation.
Oh, okay. Ha ha ha, Chan's so funny.
I know. We both did not acknowledge each other's joke and just kept going. We both never acknowledged each other's joke, but then went with each other's joke, and then we're both confused as to why the jokes were different. That's a rundown of like the events that had just happened, just so everyone knows.
Alright, Coronation Day.
At Coronation Day, Prince Wu is planning his coronation. He's like talking about dancing badger moles and
apparently on normal coronation days things go crazy. There's like a huge celebration, there's dancing badger moles, there's all these like performers, and apparently it lasts like up to 6 hours. Well, Prince Wu is still expecting all this,
which we later learn he won't get, but we'll get to that. Well, actually, I feel like we can kind of just go through the Prince Wu storyline, just because it's short, simple, sweet. Doesn't have all. Well, I think it gets a little intertwined later on.
Yeah, it does.
Kuvira stuff. So
yeah,
I think that we have to kind of hold the reins on that. But essentially, I think all of this we can talk about early on is that Prince Wu is planning all of this coronation stuff, and a little bit later on we find out that like, When Ba Sing Se was kind of liberated, we chose different words, by the White Lotus, the Red Lotus, my bad, the royal jewels, the pantaloons and all of these things were all stolen, and the only thing that was left was what Prince Wu thought was an earring, and they were like, but we can use it as a brooch. It's the royal brooch. And he's just kind of devastated at this whole mm-hmm. idea, right? Like this, the fact that he's not going to have his dancing badger moles, the fact that he's not going to have these singers, the earthbending girls that come out of the rocks and bang them like drums, like mm-hmm. all of that is just not possible at this point. Who stole the earthbending girls, though?
I mean, they said that all our subjects are kind of just like took off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so everybody just kind of like left.
Yeah, yeah, like if the queen died and everything's going to chaos, like you're pretty much like, I'm out of a job. I don't think I'm going to stick around for 3 years. Like, just for the hell of it? No, like.
Yeah. Go off to live in like a different Earth Kingdom city, like Omashu.
Yeah, so
to be fair, which interestingly enough, like we never got to revisit Omashu here. in this show.
Surprisingly. Yeah.
Right? I thought Omashu would have been a cool place to visit. See what's going on in Omashu these days.
But Mako is still not excited about having to move to Bang Sing Se with the prince. No excitement there, but he gets intertwined with a conversation with Tenzin and the president. So Tenzin tells the president, it's like, we still don't know where Korra is. Like, we have no idea where her whereabouts are, but we do have airbenders all over the world looking for her. So they do have some sort of expanded network that they're kind of trying to use to see if they can get any clues, any information to see where she ended up and where she's been for the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm. But Raiko is kind of, Raiko and Tenzin are kind of talking about how they're a little bit worried about Kuvira kind of like stepping down from her position peacefully, right? Like the idea that, she's kind of amassed a lot of power. Like, you think she's going to be just easily willing to give them all up?
Yeah. So yeah, Tenzin was definitely like worried about that. The president's like, oh, don't worry about it. She promised me. She gave me her word that she's going to step down. So we're good. We're fine. Like,
yeah.
Cool. That's definitely how it works. And I mean, it's very justified, the concerns that Tenzin has because of what we've seen prior. Like, she's really ruling with an iron fist. As she's kind of like forcing us, like the Earth Kingdom, like states to kind of fall in order or else, with how much power she's seizing. They even mentioned there she was throwing people into prison encampments that she's created.
Yeah.
So she's going like full force, like join my side or else. And she's really, standing firm with that or else.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking up like ideas around, cause we see the Earth Kingdom map, like the entire Earth Kingdom went to shambles. And as I spoke about Omashu earlier, I just want to bring up like a talking point, right? Like, we used to know Omashu cause like Omashu has a king. It's kind of like a governing city, right? It seems like it's relatively independent of the rule of Ba Sing Se and everything like that. Or at least it seems like that because like the Earth Kingdom is so vast. And so wide that it would be hard to kind of keep law over that entire mass of land.
Yeah.
Here, you know, I actually find it kind of strange we hear nothing about it. As the Earth Queen dies, right? Like, did nobody ever replace Bumi? Did Omashu just become its own kind of state, like non-monarching governing state? Like, the fact that even either it was overlooked and like they never thought about Omashu. I'm sure though that this team had thought about it, right? And they just decided not to do anything with it. But I've like, how interesting would it have been if Omashu like rose up as like the new kind of governing state of the entire Earth Kingdom. And as Kuvira is trying to put back together the Earth Kingdom, there's kind of like these two factions of the Earth Kingdom, right? Where it's like this East versus Western Earth Kingdom, where one side is led by like Kuvira and like her brigade going around like the west side of the Earth Kingdom, while Omashu over in the east side is kind of building up power and wealth and influence among like the Eastern Earth Kingdom cities. And then it's not just a power struggle between Kuvira and the independent states, but it's actually like these two sides of the Earth Kingdom that had always had some sort of like fracture between them. There was never really like a real clean divide between which side of the Earth Kingdom you were on or anything like that.
I mean, but the Great Divide like, would probably section it off fairly well, right?
That probably would make sense. Yeah. The Great Divide. Well, is it there though? Is it?
I don't know. You just.
I need to pull up a map where the Great Divide is, but that, I mean, that would make sense if it geographically fits. But
no, I don't know.
What do you think about that?
I think that they didn't bring it up.
Because it's too complicated.
It is pretty complicated, but I figured that if the Earth Queen were to die and it was a simple fact of killing her and then like the entire Earth Kingdom went to chaos as it was shown, that means that there was no other like power. Like, I don't think that like there is a replacement to King Bumi that Omashu must have changed to some sort of political rule or or I don't know, some sort of different other than like monarchy, because I don't think the expanse of the entire Earth Kingdom would have just fallen because of one leader. So if there was an additional leader, like a different king somewhere or queen or something like that. So for what I think is probably like the queen was the only ruling,
Bumi's the king of Omashu and that's it.
Like I would think like whoever took over Omashu would be ruling like the city as well as like surrounding lands.
The surrounding areas, right?
Yeah. But maybe it was just the queen at this point. I mean, it had been 70 plus years since Bumi was there. So things could have drastically changed.
I think this is a good question. We could turn this entire discussion into a bonus episode.
Most likely.
So maybe let's table that. I wonder what some of our guests would say. Like, I wonder what, like, Tim or Raz or anybody else who's been on the show, like I wonder what they would all say about that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I've never actually thought about it. I completely forgot.
Fran, Marilyn, anybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think everybody. It's something I've never completely thought of until today.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I don't know where we were when I took the tangent.
To I just mentioned that they're like. Kuira's gonna step down tomorrow. It's totally fine. She gave me her word. So,
oh yeah, it's all fine.
Yeah, they're totally like yeah. She's like, you know, the great uniter, and has like all this military power, but she's totally gonna be willing to just step back and give that all up to a prince who doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and I mean, in this half of the story, like, because this episode is told in two locations, right? And at this location, if we're going down this way, the coronation comes. Well, no, before the coronation even comes, they check into, like, their hotel, and Kuvira and Bolin and Batar Jr. and, like, that whole brigade, like, kind of comes and checks in. And then Kuvira walks in and is like, we're going to the presidential suite, what's his name? Prince Wu.
Yeah.
Is kind of like, wait, the presidential suite, like, I'm in the presidential suite.
Yeah. He was trying to like push his like power on her and was saying like, oh, like if you need anything, like I'll talk to the staff. Like if you need a room upgrade or anything, it's like, oh, that's not necessary. I booked the presidential suite. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So it was funny because he's like trying to like push his like power as the prince who's been living here for years, but
she
apparently has more power than him, being able to just literally remove him from his room.
Yeah, and then his assistant's like, "Don't worry, sir. We've booked you a very nice junior suite." and he's just like having a bad day. Yeah. And Kuvira gives that line like, "I always get what I want," right?
Yeah. What did she say specifically? Something you have to know about me is I always get what I want.
Yeah. This is like just not a good day for Prince Wu. Not only is he not going to have the coronation in the way that he wanted to, not only is he pushed out of the presidential suite, but the coronation comes, right? Like, this is like where
there's a bunch of conversations prior to that.
Were there?
Yeah, with Bolin and Eska.
Eska? Right? Am I forgetting something? I remember him meeting up with Mako for the first time. They do their little jab dance thingy.
No, before that, it was like the first scene going into the hotel was him and Eska and Desna.
She was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So he meets up with her and it's like, oh, like I like your new girlfriend. And it's like, oh, Kuvira? That's my boss. It's like, same thing.
Yeah.
And then in my head, it's just like, the twins are like so like doom and gloom. And I was like, oh wait, this is who's ruling the north. And then
they're the new chiefs of the north. Yeah.
Of the north. And then like we would have Prince Wu like taking over the entire kingdom, like Earth Kingdom. Like this would be such a crazy like political, like who's in power. It would be such a crazy like stance of like how they would probably like rule. You know.
We never got to meet the Fire Lord.
Nah.
Unfortunately.
And the other conversation was like you mentioned, Batar Jr. was there and Sue.
Mm. And, oh, and they just have bad blood between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah. So it really seems they're both pretty pretty salty towards each other. Bolin's kind of, I mean, Batar Jr.'s kind of trying to mention, like, mm-hmm. oh, like now do you regret, like, not helping us or you know, siding with us, like, after all the good that we've done? And yeah. So it's like, what are you talking about? Like, forcing people to march, like, in line and like the way that you guys are doing it, like that's not what I think is successful or good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's interesting too, because I mean we see some interactions with Sue later, which I mean she kind of mentions like I didn't want to seize like power for myself, like mm-hmm. what you did and everything like that. And there seems to be some contention around like what Sue was and wasn't willing to do to help out the Earth Kingdom after mm-hmm. After the fall of the Earth Queen and everything like that. And so things that we actually just never really get real backstory on, like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think after that conversation here in the hotel that we see a little bit later that we'll get back to, but I don't think we really get much from that. Like there's no payoff. There's mm-hmm. there's no, what did Sue do? You know, yeah. It's really just like, they mention this. It's like, we just got to accept that there is, there was like a difference in opinion and Kuvira just decided to go off on her own and do what she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue chose to not follow her. Sue chose not to step up as a leader of the Earth Kingdom or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I would like to know a little bit more about that, but I don't think we actually get that through the rest
no,
of the season.
No, I mean, I think it's mentioned one more time during a conversation between Kuvira and mm-hmm. Sue, but it's never much in detail of what happened.
Yeah, and to an extent, I don't know if it needs to be. I think that the extent of the conversation was that the extent of it is that Sue was very much complacent about mm-hmm. where things were. And Kuvira wanted more order, and so Kuvira did that. I think that's like kind of where the conversation ends. I would like to see a little bit more from it, but there is enough information for us to kind of go off of to not feel in disbelief of the story in any way.
Yeah.
So now we get to the coronation that I've been trying yes. to get to this entire time.
Well, you've already explained it, so.
Well, yeah, just the idea of Prince Wu is kind of pouting at his coronation, mm-hmm. gives Kuvira the Kiyoshi Medal of Honor.
Of freedom.
The Kiyoshi Medal of Freedom, which is the highest honor in the Earth Kingdom. Kuvira asks to say a few words, and Prince Wu says, yeah, absolutely. And she's basically like, yeah, I have no intention of stepping down, letting this buffoon take rule. And, oh, this medal you just gave me? Let me just crush it.
I'm sorry, right before that, when, like, Prince Wu got his little earring, you just hear in the background, go woo, woo. Like, it's very subtle. And I do not remember that whatsoever. And, like, I barely heard it that I had to play it back. And it's literally just, like, someone in the back just, go woo, woo. It's like, what? That's as much as he's getting out of this coronation.
Yeah. I barely noticed it, and yeah, it's very, very subtle. There, it makes you wonder how many like subtle things there are in the show, because we point them out every so often. But
yeah.
I wonder how many we both miss. You know?
Yeah,
I mean?
I'm sure there's way more.
But yeah, that's the. That's the whole coronation. We go to commercial break after that.
yeah, it was a whole speech that she had where she was kind of blaming the pathetic rule of kings and queens for the reason the Earth Kingdom went to shambles and to chaos. So mm-hmm. she really sees, and she even mentioned like specifically that she got that idea that like monarchy and everything was to blame from growing up in the metal bending, like mm-hmm. with the metal benders. And from Sue, that she learned that specifically from Sue. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's like, I'm going to create the new Earth Kingdom Empire instead, and with me leading it. And we see that she has, like, a good amount of supporters, and, like, her supporters are, like, almost like cult-like members as they, like, dress in military fashion and, like, have their haircuts, and everything, like her soldiers.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting because Sue did mention something like this back in season 3 when she was eating like a dinner with Korra or something like that, right? Like, I believe she said something like, kings and queens are so last century or antiquated, something like that, right?
Yeah, as they were talking about the queen. Mm-hmm. Because they had just come from there and they had, Korra had some conflict with the queen.
More reasons why Raz would have thought that Sue was in on it.
Exactly. So she did mention that, and it's kind of like so outdated. So we do understand that, like, she doesn't necessarily believe that that's like the proper way, especially from what Kuvira said, like the just having a royal take over because they're royal. So it really seems like she thinks that things need to be updated, and maybe that's the reason she thought she didn't want to get involved as much.
Yeah, I think that, and I can understand, right? Her thing is less about royals being unfit to lead and more about, like, the fact that we just select a person based off of, like, you're an important person based off of these specific criteria. You are automatically going to be the one to lead us. Like, it doesn't have to be a bloodline thing. It could be like, oh, you run the royal city. You run the metal city. You run the metal clan. Like, run the Earth Kingdom. And it's like, I think you need to be a little bit more specific than just that. Like, what do the people want out of a ruler as opposed to just wanting a ruler? Do the people even want a ruler, or do they want some form of government that will, like, let them rule but also, like, moderate conflict, right? Like, that it makes more sense than it's not just about bloodline. It's about meaningless claim to power.
Yeah, it definitely seems like she has a perspective of a different perspective than most, just because I feel like when you become a leader, you understand the responsibilities and the hardships that it comes from ruling. As she has this huge city that is known by everyone around the Earth Kingdom and the world. Mm-hmm. And I think with that experience, you start to understand that, like, not everybody can just take power. Not everybody can just rule, and that it takes a certain type of person. So I feel like that might be the reason where she wouldn't want to get involved, because she had a biased perspective of, this is technically good. It didn't go down the way that it should have. She shouldn't have been murdered, and everything shouldn't be in shambles, but that something good can come from this. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's like, for her, it was, this is my perspective. This is my beliefs. So for me to enforce my will that this is a good thing and it should continue this way, which goes opposed to a lot of people in power, might not be the best thing to do. Because again, like you mentioned, it might have been for her, but to get some recognition that, like, the people should choose. Like, we should make a decision, but maybe it's, like, not the proper time because of how it happened.
Yeah, yeah. And also just everyone went through a lot. I mean, I don't know if Sue was as personally affected as other people were, but, like, you can't gauge another person's frame of reference, right?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, her daughter was taken and she thought she was gonna die, so I mean,
it's a big thing. It's not like you can just, like, bounce back from that immediately and say, all right, we're gonna turn around the entire Earth. It's like, give me some time.
Her trusted advisor as well, like, most trusted advisor betrayed her. So she definitely had a lot going on herself that she kind of had to manage.
Not to mention that this is all happening, like, within weeks of her, like, reconnecting with family.
Yeah.
You know, like, even though that's, like, you know, a more objectively positive thing as it was, like, portrayed to us, a lot happened in the last few weeks, and we might need to slow it down a little bit before we just put me on the throne or anything like that. As Lin and Kuvira come to talk, like, Sue was sent by, you know, by the other world leaders, and as they were having that conversation that we spoke of earlier, she says, I'm here as their representative, and they're asking you to stand down. And they get into a little argument Kuvira talks about how she brings freedom, and then Lin's kind of like, freedom, I know what happens to Earth Kingdom colonies that don't bow down to you. And then Kuvira's like, so you know what's coming for Zhao Fu.
She just bam, made a threat. She's coming for her. She's coming for everything.
Doesn't even deny it. Yeah. At the same time, Bolin and Mako are having an argument of their own. Bolin, like Mako's having to, like, you know, comfort Wu in his junior suite. And then Bolin comes and knocks on the door, finds Mako, and is like, yo, that was crazy, right? They're like, yeah, dude, like, how are you going to get Kuvira to stand down? And then Bolin's like, oh, because Bolin had spoken to Kuvira at this point,
so,
right? Yeah.
So right before the conversation with Sue, he was trying to, like, mention, like, was this... Well, he was talking to Varric, and he's like, do you think, like, this was the, like, the right way to go about things? Like, now we have everybody against us. And Varric's kind of just reassuring him. He's like, and what are they going to do? We have the military power. It's mm-hmm. like, we have... they're begging us for the metal that we're mining. Like, we are untouchable. Yeah. So regardless of what they say and what they do, technically, like, in Varric's eyes, it's like, they can't do anything to us. They can't move on us.
Meanwhile, Varric is still technically a war criminal.
I mean, no, because he mentioned in the hotel that he made the president pardon him. Kuvira mm-hmm. made the president pardon Varric for his
yes.
crimes.
Yes.
So that's why he's, like, freely still walking in Republic City without any repercussions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, yeah, and so Bolin talks about, like, the misgivings that he has about the way that Kuvira kind of just ambushed everybody. He actually uses the word ambushed everybody. Mm-hmm. And Kuvira... See, to me, I think that Kuvira has this, like, this manipulative way about her, but she also... There was something, like, that felt really sincere about the way that she spoke to Bolin, and I couldn't tell if it was manipulative or if it was sincere, and that's probably why it feels manipulative.
it's selective truth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's not a liar. And what she says, she truly believes in. But it's just in the manner of how she's trying to get to this point is what's the conflict. So for her, she's willing to... It is very manipulative because it's selective truth. So she's willing to tell him... enough truth for him to still side with them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not going to, like with when they were in the city with Opal and Kai and everyone, like, she told her soldiers enough information that they would still side with her and see in her perspective, which was, right. Hey, governor doesn't want our help. We're going to get out of here because we can't do anything. And she did, you know, didn't mention that, like, hey, he doesn't want to sign this contract that makes everything he owns ours.
Yeah.
So it's very manipulative in that way that she does truly believe in what she's saying. So that's why it comes off like so sincere and convincing because right. it's technically what she wants is, you know, the Earth Empire to be whole and to be ruled properly. And it just happens to be her.
Yeah. And she's basically saying, like, yeah, that was just some tough rhetoric to let people know we mean business, which is like a line that Bolin quotes verbatim back to Mako. But Bolin says that he'll stand with her. He goes to find Mako. And they get into an argument because Mako's like, yo, your boss is kind of crazy. Like, you obviously aren't going to go back and work for her again, are you?
Mm-hmm.
And then Bolin's like, dude, what are you talking about? We bring freedom everywhere we go. Like, the world is so much better off because of us. And he's only seen the good parts of what's been happening.
Yeah, he even, like, mentions very specifically, he's like, remember Gram-Gram's old neighborhood? Like, that's so much better. Like, you have to go see it. Like, so he, like you mentioned, he's seeing the good that they're doing, but he's only seeing the good parts. He's not seeing the dark manipulative conversations and deals that Kuvira is kind of having to do to get that, those supplies, that freedom that he mentions. But then he makes a good point because he's like, okay, well, do you think your prince would do a better job? And Mako admits, he's like, well, no. That's definitely like the harder way to go about it because it's just like your option. I don't agree with your option, but the option, which is the prince, is not what I don't agree with that either.
yeah, absolutely. And so, and then, you know, Wu hears all of this, right? And Wu feels, you know, hurt by not only what Bolin is saying, but by Mako not defending him. Mm-hmm. But then, like, immediately lets it go. He's like, let's just go shopping. let's go to Little Bossing Se Mall or whatever.
Retail therapy.
Yeah. Which doesn't go well.
There's not whatsoever.
A slew of Kuvira supporters. He throws a smoothie at them.
Yeah.
He steals a cape from a little kid and is like, yeah, this is my coronation day. It's just unhinged.
So they had to run, and then there was like that mock restaurant of like the royal palace.
Yeah.
It looked like it was like a buffet style like restaurant.
Yeah.
And yeah, he stole the cape and the crown and he just started bawling. But yeah. Mako took initiative and he told him how it is. He's like, if you were an Earth Kingdom citizen, would you want a king like yourself?
Yeah.
And it's like Kuvira's doing bad, like Kuvira's taking this power, but she's also done so much good. Like, what have you done?
Yeah.
And Prince Wu even mentions, like, no one's ever talked to me like that. And it's true. I mean, like, it's that realization that, like, a leader needs to lead in the front. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be able to step up and make people understand, like, why you're the leader and also be willing to do the work to prove that you're a leader. And that's not what Prince Wu has been doing this entire time. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just been spoiled. Living at this hotel until it was safe to go back to Ba Sing Se.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like this because I think that, you know, I think that Prince Wu in this season gets a pretty decent arc. Like, I like his arc.
Yeah, definitely.
He has a good one. And I think that this is, like, the beginning of it. I don't think that he was at the beginning of his arc when we first meet him. I think this is the beginning of his arc because this is, like, the inciting event that actually forces him to actually do something different.
It's really, really reflecting and understanding, like, okay, what have I done, and is there anything I can do?
Which, to be fair, it starts this episode, but also it doesn't, because immediately after, like, Mako gives him that talk, the angry mob is coming after him, and Mako's like, we gotta go, and he's like, carry me. So let me see. What's a couple of other things before we go to the chorus Toph stuff?
I think the last couple of things was just Tenzin talking to his kids.
To his kids, yeah.
So he's tasked them, all three of them, to go and look for Korra.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that Varric got a giant spirit vine, and Kuvira tells him that this is going to be his number one priority. Developing this technology is going to be his number one priority.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely something crazy, something important. We saw him grab a piece of that earlier and then, like, wheel it away. Now he's doing some sort of experiments on it, and it seems like it's very important to Kuvira specifically.
Absolutely, yeah. So that was it for the non-Korra stuff. The Korra stuff is a lot shorter, but I think really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Korra is with Toph, and Korra's like, what are we going to do today? And Toph's like, I don't know, like, relax, hang out, not do anything. And Korra's like, why? I thought you were going to help me. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, why would I help you? Did she say something like that? She's like, why would I help you? I don't remember what the exact dialogue between them was, but it eventually just kind of turned into Toph insulting Korra a little bit and then agreeing to help her.
It was, she's like, I need you to help me get back into fighting shape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and then, like, that was the whole conversation of, like, back and forth. And then she kind of ended up just telling her, like, Korra's like, well, the world needs me. And
the world doesn't, like, need you. Get over
the
yourself.
The world doesn't need you. Yeah, exactly. So she's kind of like, Korra's trying to convince her, like, no, like, I'm the Avatar. Like, I've stopped a lot of bad people and a lot of bad things from happening.
Yeah.
But Toph mentions, like, oh, when I was on the beat, when I was a police officer, like, I stopped so many people. But you know what? More came with different names.
Yeah.
So, like, no matter what you do, there's always going to be another person. There's always going to be another bad person to stop. So for Toph, it's just like, yeah, you're doing good, but it's just like, at the end of the day, it's inevitable that there's going to be a bigger a bigger foe to fight.
Yeah, yeah. And so, what is it that Korra? What is it that Korra says that gets Toph to agree to spar with her?
I don't know.
I honestly can't remember what it was.
I remember.
But she says something. Someone's gonna let us. Someone will tell us. But she says something. Toph agrees. So they go out into the swamp to start sparring, and Toph's like, "All right, show me what you got." And Korra just starts throwing punches, throwing air, water, earth at Toph, and Toph is just effortlessly dodging it, like
cruising.
Yeah,
by
literally.
It. Yeah.
What I was gonna say was like the way that Korra was animated, and we get into this a little bit later, like was so slow motion and heavy, right? Like every single blow felt so laborious, and like it took just so much. It was so slow mo. Like Korra was moving in slow motion almost.
Well, the thing was, Toph mentions like, "What did you do wrong?" It's like, "Well, I was thinking at you." It's like, "Exactly, you were thinking." Mm-hmm. It's like you, but this is. I think this is the first time that we've ever seen Korra transition from three different elements like so rapidly. Mm-hmm. Like she went, she did two air attacks. She did rock. I mean, she did earth, and then she went into water. Mm-hmm. But it's like we never see her transition like so rapidly from one element to another. Normally she favors one, and then she might implement another if there's an opening. Mm-hmm. So it really seems like she's just trying too hard. She's in her head and she's thinking about like what needs to be done instead of like reacting and having that instinct that she used to have.
It's funny how we both are 100% right and like on point with that analysis, and we both focused on a different part of that analysis. Like I had noticed that. I was like, yeah, she's using everything right now except for fire. She didn't really use that much fire in this one.
No.
But I was like, yeah, she's using everything right now, but she's just so slow and slow motion and so heavy. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's funny.
Yeah.
We take something different every time.
Oh yeah. That's only because there was a video that I saw about Aang and how he used, when he was using earth, he, during instances where he used earth, he was losing. Mm-hmm. And it was because of fear. So he's so comfortable, like earth essentially is like his worst element. But when he was fighting Azula on top of the drill, he, instead of going to a natural element like water, but water wasn't very available there, or just going to air, which is his natural element.
I'd be willing to say it's his best element.
Yeah, which is he used earth like to have an earth fist and then have like an earth wall, and it's just like why, like it was out of fear. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I started noticing a little bit more of like how different characters are using their elements, and for her specifically it's just like, why didn't you go to something that's so familiar for you and like fire? Mm-hmm. And she used everything else because she's trying to outthink her, which isn't working at all.
Yeah, I mean, given the way that she was moving, though, I doubt that the fire would have been effective. And then Korra even mentions, like, I feel like I can't hit you. Like, I'm so, either, like, she said, either I'm so heavy or I'm so slow. And then Toph mentions, like, well, yeah, I feel like you should be with all that metal inside of you. And Korra's like, what are you talking about? She's like, yeah, there's, like, chunks of metal inside of you from, like, that poison that you talked about with the Red Lotus or whatever. And Korra's like, no, like Sue bent that out of me, and Toph's like, yeah, my girls never really picked up metal bending like I thought they should have, but and Korra tells Toph like, you've got to bend it out of me, and with a little bit of resistance, Toph agrees, lays Korra down, puts her on the table, tells her to relax, and Korra's like, I am relaxed, and Toph's like, you literally look like a twisted tree root.
Yeah.
Oh wait, one thing I wanted to mention.
Just do it.
One thing I wanted to mention too is like, Korra said like, you were kicking my butt, and Toph's like, and I'm an old lady. Imagine me in my prime, like, which is why I'm like, this Toph feels so much more authentic to the Toph that we know and love than like the flashback Toph's that we get.
Exactly. That's actually a conversation I had with someone over on Instagram that. that we see Toph, and this definitely seems like the more authentic original Toph that we're accustomed to. I mean, if you would have only seen Avatar Last Airbender and someone would have told you like, oh, and Toph's going to become chief officer and create like this whole like police force, you would have been like, what?
No,
like, what are you talking about? And it really seems like in her older age, she kind of reverted back to who she really was. And I think that's actually something that a lot of people do. As we had that conversation on Instagram, I kind of started like realizing that like a lot of people, they're kids and they have this personality, they have this freedom. And then we go into like adulthood, we enter into adulthood and we try to find ourselves and we consume ourselves with careers and tasks and expectations, and then end up trying to just find that happiness again that we had as a kid. And ultimately, if you don't find it in your career path or be able to integrate it into your life, I mean, a lot of people wait until their older age and kind of revert back to that personality of like, now I'm free. Now I can be who I was.
Yeah. I mean, Toph felt the most like herself when she began traveling with Aang and Katara and Sokka and just traveling the world. And so it doesn't surprise me that after she retires, she's like, all right, I'm just going to do that. Like, my friends are gone. Mm-hmm. Well, Katara's still around, but... Katara, she's not going to leave the Southern Water tribe or whatever. You know, but like, yeah, like, I'm just going to go do what felt like the best version of me and just travel the world.
Even Korra asked her, it's like, why did you choose to disconnect? It's like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm more connected now than I ever was. I can see everything. Mm-hmm. I can see Zaofu. I can see Republic City. And like these trees, these vines, it's connected throughout the entire world.
Which is also, to me, like, I kind of get chills because the first time we ever see Toph is in a vision from Aang inside of the swamp at that tree, right? Like, maybe not at that exact spot on the tree, but the swamp is essentially that tree, right? So, like, I think that to me, like, that just feels really cool that they bring this character back to her original roots, which were not in the town where she was found with her parents. It was in the swamp nearby this town, right? Which also feels a little bit poetic too. Like, the swamp would be geographically close to Toph's home, like original home. And I think that's like a little bit important too. So anyways, Toph tries to bend the metal out of Korra, and Korra is just like fighting it at every turn. Until the point where Toph tries one more time and Korra has like a flashback of almost being killed by Zaheer. And then Toph's like, you know what? Like, I can't do this. If you want this metal out, you're going to have to bend it out yourself.
She's like, I think you want it in you. And it's like, what? Like, why would I want this metal in me? And it's like, well, it's an excuse for you not to go back to being the Avatar. I mean, it's your excuse to not have to get hurt again. And as we were talking before, it's just like that's a trauma. And those are the side effects of trauma is just a protective factor. So
it's this idea of like learned helplessness, right? Like if you can, you know, if you can avoid putting yourself into situations that are dangerous, then you'll do anything that you can, which even includes like, rationalizing, and it might not be a conscious process, right? But like rationalizing situations that that you actually have control over, rationalizing that you don't have control over these situations because it fits the narrative it fits more with the narrative that the world is a dangerous place, the world is unpredictable, I can't go outside, I can't do this, I can't do that, right? It's easier for us to have a fully congruent view of the world, even if that view of the world is limiting to us, then have an incongruent view of the world where some of that incongruency gives us more freedom. So, yeah, very, very cool little end to the Korra and Toph saga of this episode. Of course, there's going to be more because Korra is still in the swamp with Toph.
Yes. So.
Tony, what are you going to give this episode?
I want to say an 8. I think I'll say a solid 8.
Dude, we can't keep doing this because I was gonna give it an 8 as well. Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's got solid. You know, I think that the action in the episode, it's not really like an action packed episode, but I think that this episode does just as well as any other episode does, if not better in some senses of giving us things to latch onto, giving us things to think about, giving us setup and payoff.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that something like seeing Toph, especially as herself, is just an incredible payoff. It's a great reward for making it this far into the series, and also like wanting to know what happens with Korra, wanting to know what happens when Milo, who insults his two sisters, is sent out on a you know, important mission with those two sisters.
Yeah.
Wanting to know what happens with Prince Wu, wanting to know what Kuvira has planned for Zhao Fu, all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. So, an 8, I think, is very appropriate for this episode.
Nice.
Any final thoughts, man?
No.
Your beard's getting pretty big.
Yeah, it's getting a lot longer. I want to cut it off, but also don't. I'm in that in-between thought process of if I should cut it off or not.
Don't cut off the beard, cut off your hair.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks everybody for listening. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we'll catch you all next time. Bye.
Bye.